Welcome to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. Dr. Coben is an author, columnist, financial planner, and international lecturer. He holds a PhD degree in public policy, MA degrees in economics and business economics, and is a graduate of Reformed Bible College. Dr. Coben is an outspoken critic of public schools, government regulation, the IRS, paper money, welfare, and abortion. An evangelical Christian and the father of six homeschool children, Dr. Coben is applauded by listeners across America and around the world as a champion of liberty, limited government, free markets, and peace. Now let's join Dr. Coben with Christian Worldview.
And a very big welcome this morning to the Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben Show. We are in our 10th week now on the Tyranny Response Network. Many improvements ahead. However, remember, we are a volunteer network, and we appreciate anything you can do to help support the show. If you are interested in supporting the show, go to policyofliberty.net, the homepage, policyofliberty.net. Scroll down until you find the various options available for you to give of your time, money, resources, or just prayer support for this program. We'd really appreciate it here at the Tyranny Response Network. Remember our phone number here in case you want to call the show, 864-201-6955. That's 864-201-6955. Currently in Greenville, we have 38 degrees, and it's partly cloudy. We're going to warm all the way up, though, this beautiful March the 7th day, to 68 degrees, and we'll possibly have some showers this afternoon. So once again, you might still want to have a light jacket along with you. It might be a little bit chilly getting into the car and getting on your way to work this morning. Well, once again, we have in the news over the weekend the public school of all things. So, well, you know, it seems like we talk about the public school a lot. It's mainly because, folks, it's just driven by headlines and also a new book such as Bruce Short's new book, which I highly recommend you all read, called The Harsh Truth About Public Schools. I've been making my way through that book, and it is just tremendous. I just had no idea how big Islam, the homosexual movement, deep ecology were driven into the public school, as it was certainly in the 1990s, and how they've actually changed the test scores around so that it shows that they're still trying to learn something at these public schools when, in fact, and they still have succeeded, I should say, in learning something at the public schools when they really have not. They've actually changed the pass rate from 75% down to 60 or 65% just to make it look like they're still succeeding. They've actually changed the test so that the questions are easier. All the way across the board. I mean, it's really a tragedy, it's a tragedy, but it's certainly just not anywhere close to what people are reporting about the public school, the quality of education there. People are lauding the public school as being successful after having all this money thrown at it. Remember, it was only $2,000 a student 20 years ago. And then adjusted for inflation number, now it's $8,000 per student in the United States. New York City, it's well over $12,000 per student, spending money like crazy at the public schools, and yet people are not learning more. In fact, the tests are being totally botched. They're being completely twisted and turned around so that it's in the favor of those who are educators. There are even widespread reports of teachers telling students what the test questions are going to be to try to boost the scores in a particular district so they can maintain the federal money. Yes, this is the reason they want to maintain the jobs and the federal money at the public school, and that's why they're willing to manipulate the test scores like they're doing. Well, we also have some other news today about, let's just face it, it's socialization in the public school. You know, people frequently criticize homeschoolers for they're not going to be socialized, those kids that go to homeschool, so it's a bad thing to go ahead and support homeschooling. They're just missing too much at the public school. Well, we like to report on stories about what kind of socialization actually occurs at the public school, and this has been a recurring theme, what I'm about to read to you, for some time in the public schools. And here again we have San Antonio, Texas, Friday, March the 4th. Just got this late in the day on Friday, at the end, obviously, after the Christian Worldview show last week. Associated Press reports, teacher fired for sex phone photos. San Antonio, a substitute teacher at a local high school was fired last month after students were shown photograph of the woman having sex, school district says. The photos were on the teacher's camera phone, which was passed around a health class at Judson High School. The teacher obviously didn't have her heart in the right place and didn't have enough sense to actually know what was right and wrong in the classroom, said Sean Hoffman, a spokesman for the Judson Independent School District. The 28-year-old woman was not identified by the district, but was not sure if she passed the phone around or if students somehow got a hold of the device another way. Either way, Hoffman said, it was wrong for those images to be available at the school, and the woman was abruptly fired February 15th. There were several pictures on there that were inappropriate, he said. Officials say the woman had been a substitute in the Judson ISD for only a month before the photo incident occurred. Well, if this were an isolated case, folks, we might be more gracious, but this kind of stuff goes on all the time in public schools, it seems. We don't know about all of the incidents, surely. And there are so many reports over the last couple of years of this kind of stuff going on that we realize that if you're sending your kids to public school, you're being socialized probably in a way you didn't, or their kids are being socialized probably in a way you didn't suspect they would be. Well, here we have another story, also Friday, March the 4th, corroborating evidence, perhaps. Fox News reports on the Associated Press wire, West Virginia teacher charged with having sex with four students. Charleston, West Virginia, Braxton County middle school teacher charged with having sex with four children under the age of 16 has resigned and permanently surrendered her state-issued teaching certificate. State police on Wednesday night filed eight charges of third-degree sexual assault against Tony Lynn Woods, 37, of Strange Creek. Strange school, too. Woods confessed to having sexual intercourse with three juveniles in a total of four times where the alleged incidents occurred. Well, we don't need to go into any more of the gory details here, folks. This is just another one of these examples of these women that go awry at the public schools. Who in the world would have? I just can't understand, folks. Again, maybe it's my nature, my socially conservative nature, or my love for freedom and not wanting to ever force anybody or coerce anybody else to behave in a certain manner. But why would you want to prey, if you're a woman, on young boys? 12 years old to 16 years old. I mean, this is really perverse, twisted, freaky, bizarre. What else can we say about this? This is just something completely out of the box, over the top, incredibly wrong. This is exactly what's going on, though, folks, in public schools. These are not isolated cases. We've read several of these on the show before. And here's yet another one. Well, this one's actually a couple weeks old, but I hadn't read it on the show. I've been saving it for a time, just like this, where we can use corroborating evidence. California teacher accused of sex with boys. So we got San Antonio on the map today, West Virginia, and now California, of all places. Sacramento, Fox News on the Associated Press reports, a 30-year-old teaching intern has been arrested after police found her with a 16-year-old male student in her car as the woman's toddler was strapped into a car seat in the back. Margaret Barriacua and the student are believed to have been having an ongoing consensual sexual relationship for several months, Sacramento police spokesman Sergeant Justin Reichley said. The investigation began Saturday when police received a report of a car parked behind an elementary school, Risley said. Officers found the windows of the car steamed up and could see two people moving inside. Okay, we don't need to go into more details on this one either on the Christian Worldview Show. You get the idea. Socializing in public school, becoming socialized in many places, now involves young boys, again, having sex with parent or with adult female teachers and maybe some other, even male teachers, given the homosexual movement's propensity to move into the public schools. Sick stuff, folks. Doesn't happen in homeschools. How come it happens in the public school? Well, look at the nature of the institution. Maybe you'll have a clue as to exactly why. Bad deal going on over there. Don't say it can't happen here. It happens all over America. South Carolina schools or schools in the Deep South, which are supposedly more conservative than others, are simply not immune. Bad things happen here, too, folks, and we need to wake up and smell the coffee on this one if we're still living in the dark about the benignness of public schools and how it might actually be a good place to send kids from families who love liberty or Christian families. Insane. Just a bad idea in general. Well, what a way to start the show this morning, huh? Talking about the socialization aspects of public schools. Well, we're going to take a quick break here on the Christian World View Show with Dr. John Coben, and we'll be back on the Tyranny Response Network after a couple minutes.
Warning. Dr. Coben's show is not recommended for anyone with an aversion to deep thinking and critical analysis.
The people never give up their liberties, but under some delusion. Edmund Burke.
Hi, this is Dr. John Coben. Many of you know that the Tyranny Response Network is listener-supported, and here's Gene Papke to tell you how you can support the Tyranny Response Network.
That's right, John. Folks, if you support TRN and you want to help financially, here's how. We at TRN are a listener-supported broadcast, but we don't take a notions, potions, and lotions approach to fundraising. If you own, operate, or work for a company with bad paper, that is, non-performing assets, we can turn that garbage into gold. Simply go to our website, NPPROS, that's N as in non, P as in profit, P-R-O-S as in professionals, your non-profit professionals, that's NPPROS.com. And remember, we raise funds, but without fundraisers.
Log on today to www.npros.com and find out how you can be a vital part in supporting the Tyranny Response Network.
In Common Sense, Thomas Paine writes, "Could we take off the dark covering of antiquity pertaining to the origin of kings and of the state and trace them to their first rise, we should find the first of them nothing better than the principal ruffian of some restless gang, whose savage manners or preeminence subtly obtained him the title of chief among plunderers, and who by increasing in power and extending his depredations overawed the quiet and defenseless to purchase their safety by frequent contributions."
If you have a question or comment for the show, please dial 864-201-6955. That's 864-201-6955, weekday mornings from 7:30 to 9. You may also email your questions and comments 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, to questions@policyofliberty.net. That's questions@policyofliberty.net.
You're listening to TRN, the Tyranny Response Network. It's roughage for your brain.
And we hope you'll be calling the show this morning to talk about the public school or talk about the nature of the state. We are going to get into some deep theological discussions today about liberty, especially based on a sermon yesterday, just to be thinking about this. Where we attend church, there is a large contingency of those who hold to the divine right position. And the pastor or the preacher said yesterday, the substitute pastor, the pinch hitter as he called himself, rebellion to authority, including the state, is rebellion against God, and rebellion is as the sin of witchcraft. And he would go on to say later on that, what about the American Revolution? Well, God may work through sinful men and their actions, which we all, of course, would agree with, but still didn't necessarily make the American Revolution anything less than sinful. Good to the divine right, true to the divine right form. We'll be discussing that comment and some other questions a little bit later here in the show today, so stay tuned on Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. But before we get to that, we don't want to leave our first topic too far behind us. We have our research staff sending us, as they often do, scouring the web and finding out stories all over America that are of interest to the show. One staff member has found the Washington Times Insider saying that students, and this is a March 6th story, "Students want police inside D.C. schools" by Denise Barnes from the Washington Times, for the Metropolitan section. D.C. high school students said yesterday that more city police officers should be inside public schools instead of the private security guards who are protecting their classmates and teachers. I wonder if they're also going to be needed to keep the females in their 20s and 30s from messing with the 12 to 16-year-old boys that are there. The police are trained to do the job, said Renee Prath-Hairston of Wilson Senior High in Northwest. If students are doing what they're supposed to do, the police pose no threat. Skipping down through the article, there are students at Cesar Chavez, who, of course, was an interesting name for a school, because Cesar Chavez was the essentially Marxian labor activists in California who rallied around trying to get better working conditions and so forth for the illegal aliens who came over to pick strawberries in California. But at any rate, interesting they have that name. There are students at Cesar Chavez who have drugs, said Francisco, 15. I've seen a student with a knife in school. The students, are we surprised that there are drugs or knives in public schools? Guess not. I'm not. There are students, those students are civic leaders, those students and civic leaders yesterday had varying opinions about the police and schools. The fatal shooting last year inside Ballou High School in the southeast was for most a defining moment in the call for change. Skipping down through the article, he says, the decision came about the having the police there, despite a report of by city auditors last summer that found the firm to be at least technically incompetent and most expensive among the five bidders. Oh, this is about which of the private security firms they might actually use. There's also some reports there that some entrances at Ballou High School had alarms, but that students had disabled them, and that school administrators have not updated security strategies in nearly 10 years. Why would the students disable the alarms? Interesting. Maybe they're committing crimes at school and don't want to get caught. Anyhow, last year they said there were a lot of fights between the punks and the blacks. Who are the punks, I wonder? Anyway, the punks and the blacks, Williams said, and I have not seen any of that this year. I wasn't concerned for my own safety, but I was concerned for my fellow Hispanics. And then there were some people who had some... A student had a gun there during a fire drill. It said a police cruiser is always outside the school. That brings a sense of security to me and my parents as well, knowing that I'm not in danger, he said. I'm an advocate for police presence in the schools, said one of the students interviewed, William Lopez. Well, I don't know that having a police car in front of the school is really going to help you in the D.C. area schools, I'm afraid, but... interesting that we can keep an update on what's actually happening inside. We're talking about the socialization that occurs in public schools, as well as the dangerous conditions that are there, prompting some students to want to have the police in the halls itself to protect them from people with guns, knives, and drugs. No surprise in D.C. I know we're not surprised by this, but nevertheless, like to keep us up to date on what goes on in these places. Don't think it can't happen in your backyard, because it might. We have also a letter coming in from the Friends of Exodus Mandate. This it says is the WND.com article confirms other research of the failure of contemporary Christian families and homes to win their children to Christ and properly instruct them in the Christian faith. Public schooling may be one culprit, but the neglect may go deeper. Other George Barna research, the SBC Family Life Council report in 2002, and Dan Smithwick's Nehemiah Institute research from the Peers Test validates the growing lost legacy of the next generation of Christian youth. K-12 homeschooling or thoroughly Bible-based Christian school has become an essential component for the faithful and obedient Christian family today. Excellent and well put, I might add, from the Tyranny Response Unit. Our members and supporters must have been more intentional and must be even more intentional in the future to missionize and re-evangelize their Christian friends, families, and fellow church members, and yes, even their pastors, on behalf of the K-12 Christian education as part of their Great Commission work. And so they're saying, look, the public school is out to lunch, and we need to just move on. Christians have nothing to do with it. In fact, in the article down below, it says, "It's the Parenting Stupid" by David N. Bass. This came out on worldnetdaily.com. A new Barna survey is shedding some light on why some Christian children are losing their faith in modern-day America. It's the Parenting Stupid. Conducted by the California-based research organization in November, the poll asked over 1,000 American adults comprised of 707 parents, including 366 self-identified born-again Christians, various questions relating to parenting and how best to raise the next generation. Tragically, the survey highlighted one disturbing fact. When it comes to parenting, there is little difference between Christians and unbelievers. George Barna, who spearheaded the research project, didn't mince words in his rundown of the poll's results. You might expect that parents who were born-again Christians would take a different approach to raising their children than did parents who have not committed their life to Christ, but that was rarely the case. Barna's findings paint a bleak picture. Only one out of every five parents identified instilling a set of religious beliefs as an important part of raising children. Almost double the percentage of parents ranked a good education as more desired goal for their children than having a meaningful relationship with Jesus Christ. When asked what makes a parent successful, only 4% identified prayer as an integral part of parenting, as a scant, and a scant 1% pointed to good character. Even exclusively among Christians, the numbers were startling. Only 3 out of 10 born-again parents included the salvation of their child in the list of critical parental emphases, Barna said. Should that fact surprise us, seeing how enmeshed the Christian family has become with secularized culture? Examine most Christian households and you will find little difference between them and families composed of unbelievers. Fathers and mothers are still absent from the home at 7 in the morning till 6 in the evening. Children are still plopped in daycare facilities until they're old enough to be shipped off to the public school. Teenagers are still expected to learn from their more from their peers than their parents, and the media are still greater implanters of values than the Bible. No wonder the voice of the Christian church in America has lost its fervor. Appreciate that article, and they're proposing once again, look, more than ever now, from what you've heard about the public school, you need to get out. We need to be done with this thing. Christians should not work for the public school, and there certainly is no reason for Christians to send their children to the public school. On the contrary, they need to homeschool them or use a Christian school. We'll come up against another quick break on Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben, and we will be back in just a minute.
Disinfecting the modern mainstream media, Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben.
We have the rights as individuals to give as much of our own money as we please to charity, but as members of Congress, we have no right so to appropriate a dollar of public money. Congressman Davy Crockett.
You're listening to the Tyranny Response Network. Go ahead, make your day.
The law of non-contradiction, the same thing cannot at the same time both belong and not belong to the same object and in the same respect. Aristotle.
This is Dr. John Coben. Visit policyofliberty.net. That's www.policyofliberty.net on the web. You'll find there books and articles written by Dr. John Coben, that's me, the Tyranny Response Unit, regarding things related to covenant marriage, allodial land titles, and free market economics. You'll also find there portraits of famous economists, including their biographical information and links to their famous works, as well as many, many quotations for liberty. Visit policyofliberty.net on the web today and find a wealth of information to help advancement of the truth.
If you have a question or comment for the show, please dial 864-201-6955. That's 864-201-6955, weekday mornings from 7:30 to 9. You may also email your questions and comments 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, to questions@policyofliberty.net. That's questions@policyofliberty.net.
Liberalism is not to be tossed lightly aside, but to be hurled with great force.
And we're indeed doing that today. One of the liberal policies also related to schooling here in South Carolina that is going to have an impact elsewhere in the nation because it is being fomented or developed from sources outside of South Carolina, pushing money here into the state in order to get people to pass the so-called Put Parents in Charge Act. And here we find that tax credit group to reorganize its staff. Saturday, March 5th, according to an article written by Jeff Stensland, and I believe this is in the state newspaper in Columbia, the group leading the charge for Governor Mark Sanford's tuition tax credit plan announced it will make staffing changes after its executive director tried to pull off a letter-writing hoax. Todd McCauley of South Carolinians for Responsible Government sent several letters to the state newspaper's editorial board using the pseudonym Dennis Sind, a fake name spelled in the same way forward and backward. Did you know if you spell Dennis backwards, it spells Sind? That's very interesting, isn't it? Don't name your kid Dennis. It's one of those backward masking names, obviously. Just kidding. Just kidding. Just interesting note this morning here from the Tyranny Response Network. Beginning in 2004, Macaulay sent at least three letters to the editor railing against the media and urging passage of the bill dubbed Put Parents in Charge by its supporters. All were signed Dennis Sind and listed various addresses. Editorial page editor Brad Warthen said he caught on to the stunt thanks to the unusual name right before one of the letters was set to run in the newspaper a few months ago. This is an attempt to defraud the newspaper and, more importantly, its readers, Warthen said. The letters were traced to Macaulay after the contact number listed in one of the letters was matched to the cell phone number of his South Carolinians for Responsible Government business card. Macaulay could not be reached for comment on Friday. Tom Swatzel, the president of the group, said he found out about the letters on Friday. We will take the issue of integrity and credibility very seriously. Swatzel said, Todd simply got caught up at the moment, and his zeal for school choice, he made a rash decision. Or he sinned, I guess you could just go out and say that was what happened. At any rate, we've seen the major parties and folks not only sin like this, but do whatever they can to get their way accomplished. Democrats are not immune from this, nor are Republicans, probably no one else in general in politics, but especially the two major parties, and especially here since the neocons are backing this. They'll use any form of pragmatism to get it passed, including fraud. So don't be surprised, folks, when you have a bad bill and people are looking to try to get into the homeschoolers' homes, especially, and regulate us through one step, you know, this gradualist Fabian socialist approach. Don't be surprised if they pull out all the stops and do whatever they can to get what they want. And here is exactly what we found with the PPIC staff members who are now being reorganized to get rid of the culprits who are caught doing this this activity. Well, switching to a slightly lighter note, one person who sent me an email over the weekend had a sort of a lighter side about Homeland Security, and it starts out as this. It's actually an alleged or hypothetical, I guess you could say, a telephone conversation between a Pizza Hut operator and a customer after the issuance of the national ID card. The operator says, "Thank you for calling Pizza Hut. May I have your national ID number?" Customer, "Hi, I'd just like to place an order." Operator, "I must have your national ID number first, sir." Customer, "My national ID number, it's 10204998-45-54610. Operator, "Thank you, Mr. Sheehan. I see you live at 1742 Meadowland Drive, and the phone number is 494-2366. Your office number over at Lincoln Insurance is 745-2302, and your cell number is 266-2566. Email address is chan@home.net. I see you're calling from home. Customer, "Huh? Where'd you get all this information?" Operator, "We're wired into the Homeland Security system, sir." Customer, sighing, I'd like to order a couple of your all-meat special pizzas. Okay, operator, "Sir, your medical records indicate that you've got a very high blood pressure and extremely high cholesterol. Your national health care provider won't allow such an unhealthy choice." Customer, "What? What do you recommend then?" Operator, "You might try our low-fat soybean pizza. I'm sure you'll like it." Customer, "What makes you think I'd like something like that?" Operator, "Well, you checked out gourmet soybean recipes from your local library last week, sir. That's why I made the suggestion." Customer, "All right, give me two family-sized ones then." Operator, "That should be plenty for you. Your wife and your four kids, your two dogs can finish the crusts. Your total is $49.99. Customer, "Let me give you my credit card number." Operator, "I'm sorry, sir, but I'm afraid you'll have to pay in cash. Your credit card balance is over its limit." Customer, "I'll run over to the ATM and get some cash before the driver gets here." Operator, "That won't work either, sir. Your checking account is overdrawn also." Customer, "Never mind. Just send the pizza. I have cash ready. How long will it take?" Operator, "We're running a little behind, sir. It's about 45 minutes, sir. If you're in a hurry, you might want to pick them up when you're out getting the cash. But then, carrying pizzas on a motorcycle can be a little awkward." Customer, "What? Wait. How do you know I ride a bike?" Operator, "It says here you're behind on your car payments, so your car got repossessed, or repoed. But your Harley's paid for it, and you just filled the tank yesterday." Customer, "Well, I'll be a blankety blank blank," whatever those symbols mean in this letter. Operator, I'd advise watching your language, sir. You've already got a July 4th, 2003 conviction for cussing at a cop and another one I see here in September 2005 for contempt at your hearing for cussing at a judge. Oh, yes, I see here that you just got out from a 90-day stay in the state control correctional facility. Is this your first pizza since your return to society? Customer is speechless. Operator, wait, will there be anything else, sir? Customer, yes, I have a coupon for a free 2-liter Coke. Operator, I'm sorry, sir, but our ads exclusion clause prevents us from offering free sodas to diabetics. The new constitution prohibits this. Thank you for calling Pizza Hut. Well, obviously very extreme. Somewhat entertaining, I suppose, for us to read this morning. The national ID card will link people, folks, to a whole system of databases that will provide information for other people that can look and find out about your life if we do indeed go that route. Let's not support the national ID card, despite the efforts of George W. Bush and his new war. We don't need to be following after this, folks. It is a dangerous thing. We've come up against the top of the hour here, and we're going to go for our regular break now on Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben, and we'll be back in just a minute.
You're listening to TRN.
Public schools will never excel because they lack intellectual capital and have to compensate for too many social problems. Daniel Golden.
Hi, this is Dr. John Coben with Integrity Group. Why is it so difficult for Christians to be good stewards of their finances? We know that God works miracles in people's lives, but He has not chosen to provide manna from above to help us meet our needs as He did with the ancient Israelites. As Christians, we should be leading the way as good stewards. Since we do not spend money on vices like non-Christians do, we should be able to save more. We want to work hard and save our money so that we can have something to give to missions and to the needy. In addition, we want to regularly set aside a portion for retirement. Christians should not have to rely on taxpayer-funded government programs for retirement. No Christian wants to become a burden to their family or church during the ever-lengthening period of old age. At Integrity Group, we are dedicated to providing personalized service, finding effective ways to protect and increase your hard-earned money. We are an independent financial planning firm. We specialize in finding creative custom solutions to meet your savings needs. Our offices are located at 514 Pettigrew Street in downtown Greenville. Make an appointment with Integrity Group today at 864-244-6464. That's 864-244-6464.
Life, liberty, and property do not exist because men have made laws. On the contrary, it was the fact that life, liberty, and property existed beforehand that caused men to make laws in the first place. Frederick Bastiat.
Warning. Dr. Coben's show is not recommended for anyone with an aversion to deep thinking and critical analysis.
If you have a question or comment for the show, please dial 864-201-6955. That's 864-201-6955, weekday mornings from 7:30 to 9. You may also email your questions and comments 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, to questions@policyofliberty.net. That's questions@policyofliberty.net.
Welcome to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. Dr. Coben is an author, columnist, financial planner, and international lecturer. He holds a Ph.D. degree in public policy, M.A. degrees in economics and business economics, and is a graduate of Reformed Bible College. Dr. Coben is an outspoken critic of public schools, government regulation, the IRS, paper money, welfare, and abortion. An evangelical Christian and the father of 6 homeschooled children, Dr. Coben is applauded by listeners across America and around the world as a champion of liberty, limited government, free markets, and peace. Now let's join Dr. Coben with Christian Worldview.
And we do welcome you back to Christian Worldview this morning. Currently in Greenville, it's just in the upper 30s, going to rise all the way up, though, to 68 degrees today. And might even have a few afternoon showers, so it may still be necessary to bring along a light jacket with you today as you make your way out the door for work. A couple things we wanted to catch up with real quick here on the newswire from the research staff. Just always trying to keep at least one eye on George W. Bush and what his supposedly Kingdom of God supporting administration is doing nowadays. We have an article written by Robert Higgs. I believe he usually writes for the Independent Review. reporting that George W. Bush originally had requested $419 billion for the military. That's 16% of the federal budget. Has now gone over budget, and 2006, he's expecting that they're expecting that $840 billion will be spent of the $2.6 trillion budget, or about one third of all government expenditures will be done or will be spent on military. This is of great concern to us, obviously, because especially here on Christian Worldview, or those who love liberty, we are not in the business of making war, but hopefully making peace. This is our most important thing. Not that we dislike the military. We certainly don't. We certainly do like the military. But we like the military as a means of national defense, as a means of a collective action that we can oppose those who try to prey on us or predators. We can repel them with a military. But to carry on various wars around the world and constantly have people in a state of war over one country or another, as George W. Bush and Clinton were addicted and prone to do, we just can't support this sort of thing. And it's certainly a huge waste of money and lives and time to go and carry on these kinds of wars as they were in Afghanistan and Iraq. He says, this Higgs in his article says, among the prominent items left out for a regular Pentagon budget are the amounts to be expended in prosecuting the seemingly perpetual wars in Afghanistan and Iraq, which currently eat up about $5 to $6 billion per month. Can you believe that? $5 to $6 billion per month spent in Afghanistan and Iraq. I'm guessing if you look at about $60 billion per year, somebody could do the math real quick and find out how much could be refunded to folks and put into their personal Social Security accounts if the administration is now proposing, if we just didn't bother going to Iraq and Afghanistan and carrying on this ridiculous war of aggression on the part of the Bush administration. Somebody rightly identified the other day, remember, that George W. Bush is right in line with the great war professors. I think it was this wayward guy at Grove City College. He's waging wars like Lincoln did against the South and like FDR did against the Japanese and Hitler. Not that there was that weren't injustices being occurring in either side, really, either of those wars, but just the way they carried out the war and the desire for bloodshed is apparent in G.W. Bush as it was in those two other leaders. Somebody had pointed that out in an article. At any rate, very interesting. We'll want to keep an eye on this thing, this Bush budgeting for military expenditures as time goes on. Also, one of my research staff, upon reading that, sent an article in from Robert Louis Dabney, who is a Presbyterian Calvinist pastor from the 19th century, and was the chaplain, personal chaplain of General Stonewall Jackson. He said, "Defensive war, then, is righteous. And only defensive war. Aggressive war is wholesale robbery and murder." And that was taken from the practical philosophy of Robert Louis Dabney, page 437. So we think, is he right? Let's see. Defensive war is then righteous, and only defensive war. Aggressive war is wholesale robbery and murder. The more I see that, the more I can say I can't agree more. We are not called upon to be war makers as Christians, and those who love liberty should not be just going to go around and marauding the globe with an army, the most powerful in the world, building an empire or setting people on course to please the United States. The only time war should be justified and should ever be used is when it's in defense of the nation or defense of us from predators, and it's not clear at all that the latest victims of George W. Bush were in any way trying to prey on us directly. In fact, if the main predator is Saddam Hussein, I see he's still alive. Well, several hundred thousand people are dead in Iraq, both Americans and especially Iraqis and Afghanis, for that matter. I think it's Osama bin Laden is still running around, too, last I checked. Seems like they haven't been very efficient at all, just a good at slaughtering people and creating a bungle and a mess overseas. Time to bring the troops home. Time to stop these phony wars. This is ridiculous that these things go on. But, of course, it promotes George W. Bush's agenda and his power. That's why it continues. From a Christian worldview, I think we have to oppose it, folks. You may have a different viewpoint. Be happy to hear it. Be sure to call the show at 864-201-6955. We have here also a quotation sent by our research staff from Senator E.W. Carmack in 1903, just over 100 years ago. Just someone wanted to write in and remind us about the great heritage of the South and the Confederacy. He says, make it personal, folks. And here's the quote. The Confederate soldiers were our kinfolk and our heroes. We will testify to this country our enduring fidelity to their memory. We commemorate their valor and devotion. There were some things not surrendered at Appomattox. We did not surrender our rights and history, nor was it one of those conditions of surrender that unfriendly lips should be suffered to tell the story of that war, and that unfriendly hands should write the epitaphs of our Confederate dead. We have the right to teach our children and grandchildren the true history of that war, the causes that led up to it, and the principles involved. Senator E.W. Carmack, 1903. For some reason, however, people who love the Confederacy are still sending their kids to public schools. And guess what they're getting taught there? You think they're getting taught that Lincoln was a bad guy, that he was America's Stalin? I don't think so. They're getting taught just the opposite. Even here in the South, people who do not know their own history as Southerners because they have not been fulfilling their goals in teaching people as they should, their children as they should. We'll take a quick break here in Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben, continue this theme and some other and deeper ones when we get back.
Warning. Dr. Coben's show is not recommended for anyone with an aversion to deep thinking and critical analysis.
The people never give up their liberties, but under some delusion. Edmund Burke.
Hi, this is Dr. John Coben. As many of you know that the Tyranny Response Network is listener-supported, and here's Gene Papke to tell you how you can support the Tyranny Response Network.
That's right, John. Folks, if you support TRN, and you want to help financially, here's how. We at TRN are a listener-supported broadcast, but we don't take a notions, potions, and lotions approach to fundraising. If you own, operate, or work for a company with bad paper, that is, non-performing assets, we can turn that garbage into gold. Simply go to our website, NP Pros, that's N as in non, P as in profit, PROS, as in professionals, your nonprofit professionals, that's npros.com. And remember, we raise funds, but without fundraisers.
Log on today to www.npros.com and find out how you can be a vital part in supporting the Tyranny Response Network.
In Common Sense, Thomas Paine writes, could we take off the dark covering of antiquity pertaining to the origin of kings and of the state and trace them to their first rise, we should find the first of them nothing better than the principal ruffian of some restless gang, whose savage manners or preeminence subtly obtained him the title of chief among plunderers, and who by increasing in power and extending his depredations overawed the quiet and defenseless to purchase their safety by frequent contributions.
If you have a question or comment for the show, please dial 864-201-6955. That's 864-201-6955, weekday mornings from 7:30 to 9. You may also email your questions and comments 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, to questions@policyofliberty.net. That's questions@policyofliberty.net.
You're listening to TRN, the Tyranny Response Network. It's roughage for your brain.
And Al Gore is back in the news again today. As of February 2000, Al Gore's website has contained a written transcript and video of a speech that Gore made on the topic of civil rights. Gore's transcript reads, "My commitment to civil rights is a deeply personal one. I watched my father, when he was a U.S. Senator from Tennessee, take courageous stands for civil rights. He opposed the poll tax in the 40s and supported civil rights in the 1950s. He supported voting rights in 1963 and was one of two Southern senators to refuse to sign the hateful Southern Manifesto opposing integration in our schools. He lost his Senate seat because of his stands." But what are the facts? This is actually called the Black Republicans of Fayette County sending out an email about the facts. R.D. Davis, a member of the Project 21, a black conservative organization, researched the voting records from the Civil Rights Act of 1964 and found Al Gore Sr. voted against the Civil Rights Act of 1964. Al Gore Sr. participated in a 74-day filibuster to delay and weaken the legislation. Al Gore Sr. proposed an amendment to the Civil Rights Act that would have kept federal funds flowing to schools that defied court desegregation orders. It was defeated by a vote of 75 to 25. 23 Democrats and one Republican voted for it. Interestingly enough, folks, Al Gore is a liar. But don't think that that lets off the other side automatically. George Bush has not necessarily been telling you the truth, folks. And he's certainly not been the friend of the Christian church, as many believe falsely. We also have an interesting email that came in about the political philosophy of the USA founders, in contradistinction to people like Al Gore or G.W. Bush. This is sent in by a listener citing a guy named John A. Tucker. Number one, our Constitution's author, James Madison, said, "I cannot undertake to lay my finger on that article of the Constitution which granted a right to Congress of expanding on subjects of benevolence the money of their constituents." Madison further noted, "If Congress can do whatever in their discretion can be done by money and will promote the general welfare, the government is no longer a limited one possessing enumerated powers, but an indefinite one subject to particular exceptions." Secondly, noted to his credit in the spirits of James Madison and our Constitution, President Grover Cleveland forfeited his second term in office rather than sign a bill that would have taken tax dollars to facilitate an orphanage in New York. It is stated, "Once the Treasury is open to the public, there are no limits to its needs or to the needs that will come out from it." Democrat Congressman Davy Crockett is seldom known for the great statesman he was. He stood on the floor of the House as he shouted down those who would have taken American tax dollars to support the Revolutionary War's distinguished naval officer's widow. Instead, he proposed that members of the Congress agree to help her from their own resources, but not to rob the public coffers, no matter just how just the cause. Davy Crockett protested, "I will not go in any argument to prove that Congress has no power to appropriate the money and act as an act of charity. Every member upon this floor knows it. We have the right as individuals to give away as much of our own money as we please in charity, but as members of Congress, we do not have the semblance of authority to appropriate it as charity." Some words missing in that quote. Thomas Jefferson once wrote, "If we can prevent the government from wasting the labors of the people under pretense of caring for them, they will be happy." Writer, professor, and economist Walter Williams wrote, "Charity is reaching into one's own pockets to assist his fellow man in need. Reaching into someone else's pocket to assist one's fellow man hardly qualifies as charity. When done privately, we deem it theft, and the individual risks jail time." Well, anyway, these are this is the philosophy of the American founders, certainly. We also have another, I guess, one final quote here he sends in from Thomas Jefferson. "I suppose, indeed, that in public life, a man whose political principles have any decided character and who has energy enough to give them effect must always expect to encounter political hostility from those of adverse principles." So true. Also sent in today by our research, one of our research staff, actually one of our producers, found this little jewel on the internet. A guy named Michael Rivero writes the following. This is just a great quote. "Most people prefer to believe their leaders are just and fair, even in the face of evidence to the contrary. Because once a citizen acknowledges that the government under which they live is lying and corrupt, the citizen has to choose what he or she will do about it. To take action in the face of a corrupt government entails risks of harm to life and loved ones. To choose to do nothing is to surrender one's self-image of standing for principles. Most people do not have the courage to face that choice. Hence, most propaganda is not designed to fool the critical thinker, but only to give moral cowards an excuse not to think at all." What a great quotation. I don't know a lot about Michael Rivero, but I'll tell you what, he's really hit it right here. Why doesn't America change, folks? Why do we continue to slide down? Because we're full of moral cowards, as he calls it. People who see the abuses happening but decide, look, you know, I've got my security to think about here. We don't want to do anything that's illegal. We don't want to do anything that's contrary to public policy that might cause us some grief. I mean, I have my children's education fund to think about. I have my retirement years to think about. I've got peace and safety now. Why do I want to rock the boat? Folks, if the founding fathers had thought that same thing, we would still be under the tyranny of King George George III and his aunts and his descendants, even the Tony Blairs of the world, so to speak. Now, I realize we have instead replaced it with a new tyranny under George W. Bush and the recent presidents, but nevertheless, we at least had a shot at liberty in this country, and we still have the heritage of freedom as our basis for our entire civilization post-1776. And to have squandered that, to have lost that now, is indeed a great tragedy and a travesty of justice in the world, and we're sorry to see that it's occurred. I'm going to read this just one more time, at least this first part. Most people prefer to believe their leaders are just and fair, even in the face of evidence to the contrary, because once a citizen acknowledges that government under which they live is lying and corrupt, the citizen has to choose what he or she will do about it. To take action in the face of corrupt government entails risks of harm to life and loved ones. To choose to do nothing is to surrender to one's self-image, standing for principles. Most people do not have the courage to face that choice. Hence, most propaganda is not designed to fool the critical thinker, but only to give moral cowards an excuse to not think at all. This is a show about deep thinking. You're listening to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben, and we're on the Tyranny Response Network. Remember, folks, we're designed at this show to try to help you think better as a Christian, so you won't be gullible people following the Pied Piper or pragmatic people willing to give up liberty for security. And we're also here to help promote all those who love liberty to think better and to act courageously in a world where it's so full of tyranny and those who want to take away what we've been entrusted by God and by our founding fathers with the great nation that America has been. We'll be back in just a minute.
Disinfecting the modern mainstream media, Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben.
We have the rights as individuals to give as much of our own money as we please to charity. But as members of Congress, we have no right so to appropriate a dollar of public money. Congressman Davy Crockett.
You're listening to the Tyranny Response Network. Go ahead, make your day.
The law of non-contradiction. The same thing cannot at the same time both belong and not belong to the same object and in the same respect. Aristotle.
This is Dr. John Coben. Visit policyofliberty.net. That's www.policyofliberty.net on the web. You'll find there books and articles written by Dr. John Coben, that's me, the Tyranny Response Unit, regarding things related to covenant marriage, allodial land titles, and free market economics. You'll also find there portraits of famous economists, including their biographical information and links to their famous works, as well as many, many quotations for liberty. Visit policyofliberty.net on the web today and find a wealth of information to help advancement of the truth.
If you have a question or comment for the show, please dial 864-201-6955. That's 864-201-6955, weekday mornings from 7:30 to 9. You may also email your questions and comments 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, to questions@policyofliberty.net. That's questions@policyofliberty.net.
Liberalism is not to be tossed lightly aside, but to be hurled with great force.
And we have a little bit of environmentalism in the news. We just want to briefly comment on it and move on. A new EPA administrator is named, according to the Washington Post. President Bush elevated Stephen Johnson, the acting head of the Environmental Protection Agency, nominating him to the top job on a full-time basis on Friday. Bush called Johnson the first professional scientist to lead the EPA. In America, why is anyone the head of an EPA? One reason is it could be, at any rate, to save dolphins. Marathon Florida, the AP network, is reporting that 19 dolphins that became stranded off the Florida Keys have died. including 13 who were euthanized, officials said Friday. More than 30 others will be moved to rehabilitation facilities on Saturday. The dolphins were euthanized after blood tests showed 13 of them were not likely to recover at all and that they were suffering, said Laura Engleby, a biologist with the National Marine Fisheries Service. Some were still not swimming on their own, and they couldn't hold themselves up, Denise Jackson of the Marine Mammal Rescue Team said. More than 60 rough-toothed dolphins beached themselves Wednesday on flats and sandbars about a quarter mile from off of Marathon. Rescue teams moved to the dolphins to nearby canal where veterinarians have been conducting medical tests. Blah, blah, blah. Any rate, interestingly enough, we have lots of stories, and we care about dolphins here. We're not upset by dolphins. We're not against dolphins on the Tyranny Response Network. What appalls us, or me especially here, and perhaps others, is that human life can be so easily disregarded and put aside. 4,000 innocent unborn children are murdered every day in the United States. There are no reports about them. But here we have the 13 euthanized dolphins and the other six who were just died on their own from natural causes after being stranded. They make the news and the headlines. It's just absolutely repulsive. And the Environmental Protection Agency, all these kinds of groups now being headed by these pseudoscientists to somehow promote a better environmental cleanup through science, is simply a farce, another way to go after money and power in the federal government. It's all it's ever been. There certainly is no crisis by any means as far as the Christian worldview is concerned. That's not to say we can be poor stewards of our environment. We can't. We must be good stewards of the environment. But the so-called scare tactics that the world will come to an end or we will actually damage civilization as if God is not in control on account of some human activity is just a bunch of it's just preposterous. And it's not just a statement I'm making baldly here, folks. We have plenty of evidence to show, indeed, to the contrary. There is a lot of science that shows that global warming is not a problem. We aren't running out of energy. We've known that. We're not running out of resources. We have plenty of things to keep the world going on in human civilization without government stepping in to make things better. Well, right before we get to our deep thinking topic of the day about the state and Christians' relationship to it, brought upon really by a statement by the sermon yesterday in church, I wanted to read a little bit from the Freeman. We try to pick up a copy of this Freeman. It's every other show if we can, or maybe at least once every third show, and read something out of it. This is the January-February edition of the Freeman. You can get the Freeman online at FEE, like fee.org. I think it's $10 a year for students, $39 a year for other people who don't have students in the home, perhaps. If you do have a student in your home, by the way, and you're tight on cash, just go ahead and get the student the edition, and he'll probably let you read it. This is Sheldon Richman writing about moral alchemy. Sheldon Richman, on page 24 of this edition of the Freeman, says, "The welfare state is a political legal environment in which the government goes beyond protecting life, liberty, and property against physical aggression and fraud. The traditional classical liberal functions, ostensibly to assure a broader conception of welfare, such as health, retirement security, and education, consumer and worker safety, and so on. We should pay close attention to words. The advocates of expansive activist government have adopted a benign label, welfare state, to describe their objective. One can say that the limited classical liberal form of governance, confined to the police power, the courts, and the fence against external threats, best serves the welfare of its citizen. By protecting each individual's life, liberty, and property, it creates a setting in which everyone can best pursue his own welfare as he sees it. History demonstrates that it worked to an extent that no one previously could have imagined. We must not let technical economics obscure the fact that, as Ludwig von Mises of the Austrian school put it, economics is not about things, intangible material objects. It's about men, their meanings, and actions. And Adam Smith pointed out, those who present detailed blueprints for what they erroneously call society's resources in reality presume to rearrange people's lives as someone would move chess pieces around a chessboard, denying their very humanity by violating their liberty." And this is indeed what the welfare state does, folks. It is a what we call in economics a proactive public policy. It's a policy. There are policies designed to do one of two things: either change your behavior, modify the way you live, as we just read, or to redistribute wealth from people who work or from some people of one class or another, whether it be rich or dying or whatever, to those who do not work and those who have some ostensible need based on some positive right to higher education or more education or right to medical care or a right to a certain level of calories that they can intake per day, right to a television set, a right to an automobile, a right to at least one air conditioner in the house. These are all kinds of things that could be promoted as people having a right to in the modern day and someone else having to pay for them. Well, indeed, the welfare state is a euphemistic phrase, a benign sounding word that simply means legalized plunder. In fact, he goes on to say later on in the article, the welfare state is based on legal plunder. Only an impossible moral alchemy could turn theft into beneficence. We see here that instead of the welfare state doing beneficence, instead of the welfare state doing what it should be doing, not being there at all, that we have legalized plunder, that people are being stolen from, extorted from, that those who do not have the money are given money, or do not have enough money, or do not have enough rights, or given rights at the expense of somebody else. And this is simply a wrong thing. This is Sheldon Richman's article. Don't have any more time to read more of it today. When we come back after the break on the following break on the Tyranny Response Network, we'll be discussing some deeper issues about the Christian faith, about liberty, about what the Bible has to say about submission to authority, and we'll get to it in just a minute.
You're listening to TRN.
Public schools will never excel because they lack intellectual capital and have to compensate for too many social problems. Daniel Golden.
Hi, this is Dr. John Coben with Integrity Group. Why is it so difficult for Christians to be good stewards of their finances? We know that God works miracles in people's lives, but He has not chosen to provide manna from above to help us meet our needs as He did with the ancient Israelites. As Christians, we should be leading the way as good stewards. Since we do not spend money on vices like non-Christians do, we should be able to save more. We want to work hard and save our money so that we can have something to give to missions and to the needy. In addition, we want to regularly set aside a portion for retirement. Christians should not have to rely on taxpayer-funded government programs for retirement. No Christian wants to become a burden to their family or church during the ever-lengthening period of old age. At Integrity Group, we are dedicated to providing personalized service, finding effective ways to protect and increase your hard-earned money. We are an independent financial planning firm. We specialize in finding creative custom solutions to meet your savings needs. Our offices are located at 514 Pettigrew Street in downtown Greenville. Make an appointment with Integrity Group today at 864-244-6464. That's 864-244-6464.
Life, liberty, and property do not exist because men have made laws. On the contrary, it was the fact that life, liberty, and property existed beforehand that caused men to make laws in the first place. Frederick Bastiat.
Warning. Dr. Coben's show is not recommended for anyone with an aversion to deep thinking and critical analysis.
If you have a question or comment for the show, please dial 864-201-6955. That's 864-201-6955, weekday mornings from 7:30 to 9. You may also email your questions and comments 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, to questions@policyofliberty.net. That's questions@policyofliberty.net.
Welcome to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. Dr. Coben is an author, columnist, financial planner, and international lecturer. He holds a Ph.D. degree in public policy, M.A. degrees in economics and business economics, and is a graduate of Reformed Bible College. Dr. Coben is an outspoken critic of public schools, government regulation, the IRS, paper money, welfare, and abortion. An evangelical Christian and the father of 6 homeschooled children, Dr. Coben is applauded by listeners across America and around the world as a champion of liberty, limited government, free markets, and peace. Now let's join Dr. Coben with Christian Worldview.
Welcome back to Christian Worldview. If you're in Greenville this morning, you're just about getting out into the cold weather this morning, 38 degrees. That's cold for us out here. I realize folks who are listening in other parts of the country towards the north, 38 sounds pretty balmy in early March. But we're rising up from 38 to about 40 degrees currently, depending on where you are in Greenville, to a high of 68 this afternoon with some possible showers. So you might want to bring a light coat with you. And especially as you're leaving this morning, might be a little bit chilly. We're having some difficulty with getting email in all of a sudden. So if you're trying to send an email to the show, I might not get it this half hour, but I'll certainly bring it up the next half hour of the next show if you do send in an email. Also had some people, at any rate, trying to call in. It seems like the line died. It may have been that you were dialing in on a cell phone. Not sure, but go ahead and try your call again. Hopefully you'll be able to get right through the second time around. We have also this hour the discussion of a rather deep issue. As I was sitting in church yesterday listening to the person preaching who holds to a rather pretty clear divine right position to some extent, at least to some extent, he said submission or rebellion against or resistance to authority is rebellion against God. Rebellion to any authority is rebellion against God. The case he was making was that the Israelites should not have rebelled against Moses, and when they rebelled against Moses, they therefore rebelled against God. And there's certainly no question about this, and God judged them immediately. You remember in the rebellion of Korah, there were 250 people that were burned up who were holding the incense against Moses, standing there against him, as well as the ground opening up and swallowing up a couple of others and their families who rebelled against the Lord. These people were clearly rebelling against the authority that God had placed over them, that is the leader Moses, and they suffered the consequences on account of that. The idea, however, is that this rebellion to authority can be translated to any kind of civil authority. This gets where it gets a little bit complicated. The idea is essentially, as the Westminster Confession says, and many Presbyterians hold, that God ordains three spheres of authority in the world. One is the family, one is the church, and the third is the commonwealth or the state. That can be found in the Westminster Shorter Catechism. And that these three things work together in promoting the kingdom of God, as Pastor John Weaver put it on a recorded show a while back on the Tyranny Response Network. These three things work together, and they are God's authorities in the world. If you rebel against the state, you rebel against God himself. And this is the old divine right view carried forward here to the modern world. And you cannot, in general, rebel against government. However, if there comes a point in which the government violates clearly what God is doing, such as forcing you to abort your children, forcing you to bow down to an idol or stop preaching the gospel, then you are not rebelling at all against the state by obeying God. In fact, it may look to them like you're rebelling, but you have the right to do so because God clearly tells you when you can or cannot rebel in the scriptures. And one thing that you have to rebel against the state or disobey the state on is when they tell you not to preach the gospel. Now, this is where the slippery slope sort of begins for those who hold a divine right position, because what do you do, where do you draw the line with these particular laws that you're allowed to rebel against? Is it just gospel preaching? Is it just not bowing down to idols? Or are there other things too? Well, I asked the preacher, a man who was preaching last night, you know, frankly, well, what would you do about the Underground Railroad? Remember, we had a good call from Juliet last week, in which Juliet said, "Look, under the Fugitive Slave Act, and you know, before the 1860s, if I were alive then, and a slave had run away into the North, and I found him, I would return him to his master because that's the law. And once something becomes the law, I need to obey it, because if you don't obey it, it becomes sin." Well, this man said, no, he would not do that. He would rebel against the law. He would disobey government's the government decree, the government legislation, and help a person escape. And he didn't really have, and he didn't go into any great detail. He's a great theologian, by the way, this fellow who was talking to him. He certainly is a believer and very well versed in the scriptures. Professor at Bob Jones University, as a matter of fact, really knows his stuff. I really do respect him for that. But he holds to this divine right view, didn't have a well-thought-out answer as to why he could just pick that particular issue of disobeying the state over others, because it's certainly not clear in Scripture that in any way, shape, or form we're allowed to disobey government on the basis of freeing slaves. Freeing slaves is certainly not just not found there. In fact, it's quite the opposite. If anything, you could make a case that Paul sent Onesimus back to Philemon So at any rate, folks, it's not clear that this could be justified. Well, how do you draw the line if you're a divine writer? When can you rebel? Is it just left up to everybody's individual conscience, as the Liberty of Conscience School would say? Well, they probably wouldn't go that far. They would say it's got to be really clear that it's a violation of God's word. You know, forcing your kids to go to a public school, would that count? Forcing people to work on Sunday, what about that? Certainly aborting every child after the first would qualify for most of them. But why? Why is it that you can just pick and choose at will the things that you like if you're holding to the divine right perspective? It seems like a completely arbitrary and capricious model for state submission. And why in the world is the state considered to be God's representative in the world for punishing evildoers, promoting the good things for those who do good? Where in the scripture do we find such a teaching? Obviously Romans 13 is where they're getting the jargon from, but where do we see the apostles or Christ and their actions and what they speak about looking to the government to uphold the law of God or certain pieces of the law of God in the world? Well, I think we don't. I think we search in vain to find those things. Well, question 17 on the deep questions for Dr. Coben's radio show states the following. And by the way, you can find this deep questions for Dr. Coben's radio show on the internet, policyofliberty.net. Scroll down to the bottom and click on the deep questions link. It'll pop these deep questions, and you'll have an opportunity to think about these things and deal with these great issues of the day, help you think better as a Christian, and promote your understanding of the Christian worldview. Question 17 says, were the founding fathers, pastors, theologians, and church members in sin by becoming revolutionaries? Proverbs 24:21 says, my son, fear the Lord and the king. Do not associate with those given to change. And I think that does mean getting involved with revolution. Were they just seeking redress of grievances against the contractual charters they had with the king? Or were they just rebels? Were the Southerners who fought against Lincoln rebels? So these are the important questions of the day. Now, I asked this this fellow who preached this the same question. I found out where he would stand on the fugitive slave legislation at the time. But what about the American Revolution itself, the American War for Independence? I mean, these are people that, as we talked with Juliet on the phone last week, threw people's tea into the harbor. Private property of the East India Company was taken and thrown overboard. And then beyond that, we had even more things going on. Overt rebellion against the king. King didn't say they had a right to revolt. King said they had to pay taxes. They didn't have any constitutional right to do otherwise. They just said, no, we're not going to do it. We're going to rebel or disobey what you have to say. And there were many Christians. So what did this fellow tell me? He said, well, God works through the sinful actions of men. And it was his purpose to have America started. And even though Christians sinned, God, in spite of their sin, allowed it to work for his glory and honor. And therefore, they did what was wrong, but yet God did what was right, made what was right happen through their wrong actions. I think that was where he was coming. Although he wasn't really, to his credit, he wasn't really dogmatic on this point. That was just his initial response. We're up against a quick break. We're going to come back and discuss this deep question. We hope you'll be thinking about calling in or writing the show with a comment about this on Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben.
Warning. Dr. Coben's show is not recommended for anyone with an aversion to deep thinking and critical analysis.
The people never give up their liberties, but under some delusion. Edmund Burke.
Hi, this is Dr. John Coben. As many of you know that the Tyranny Response Network is listener-supported, and here's Gene Papke to tell you how you can support the Tyranny Response Network.
That's right, John. Folks, if you support TRN and you want to help financially, here's how. We at TRN are a listener-supported broadcast, but we don't take a notions, potions, and lotions approach to fundraising. If you own, operate, or work for a company with bad paper, that is, non-performing assets, we can turn that garbage into gold. Simply go to our website, NP Pros, that's N as in non, P as in profit, PROS, as in professionals, your nonprofit professionals, that's npros.com. And remember, we raise funds, but without fundraisers.
Log on today to www.npros.com and find out how you can be a vital part in supporting the Tyranny Response Network.
In Common Sense, Thomas Paine writes, "Could we take off the dark covering of antiquity pertaining to the origin of kings and of the state and trace them to their first rise, we should find the first of them nothing better than the principal ruffian of some restless gang, whose savage manners or preeminence subtly obtained him the title of chief among plunderers, and who by increasing in power and extending his depredations overawed the quiet and defenseless to purchase their safety by frequent contributions."
If you have a question or comment for the show, please dial 864-201-6955. That's 864-201-6955, weekday mornings from 7:30 to 9. You may also email your questions and comments 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, to questions@policyofliberty.net. That's questions@policyofliberty.net.
You're listening to TRN, the Tyranny Response Network. It's roughage for your brain.
And we're trying to provide some roughage for your brain right now here on the Tyranny Response Network. We're discussing this very deep issue that, again, is so commonplace, I think, in American Christianity, that rebellion against the state or authority in general is rebellion against God. Now, everybody agrees from the Christian worldview that having a rebellious attitude, having a heart thinking a thought of, I'm going to go ahead and be rebellious and wicked, is wrong. We know that it's like rebellion is like the sin of witchcraft. But is there a time in which we can rebel or disobey government? Everybody thinks, yes, you can. The question is really when and why, and what are the expectations we have of the state? This man who preached last night was very clear that he would be willing to help people who are enslaved escape if he were given that choice. It sounds like he'd be willing to even, I don't want to put words in his mouth, but from what I understand, he'd be willing to lie in the face of Hitlerites trying to murder Jews or anyone else during World War II. And he would be willing to at least say that in the American Revolution, people did what was wrong in rebelling, but God worked it for good. So we appreciate that honesty there, but where does it actually stop? And the different perspectives of public policy have a different indication ways of handling different kinds of actions and deciding whether or not they're right or wrong. Well, we have a caller on the line. Hopefully he's going to call in and discuss this great issue with us, and we'd like to welcome you to Christian Worldview. Who am I speaking with?
This is Joe, Dr. Cohen. I really appreciate your show and enjoy listening to you.
Thanks so much for calling, Joe. Really appreciate you saying that. What's on your mind this morning?
Well, you know, I called about two weeks ago. We were talking about the same issue you're talking about. We were talking about it in the form of a 501c3, and I did not know if you took that to another level or give me more thought. I sent you some things on email to look at. And the things they could and could not preach for or against.
Well, a couple of weeks ago, we did go through a bit of the discussion of 501c3s on the show here. May actually have gone over that email that you'd followed up with, or that you'd sent through. But
okay.
I don't recall the exact details. It's been a while now. Each show just fills my mind with new things, and 2 weeks ago seems like an eternity. So go ahead and pick up where on if any of those issues are of concern.
Well, you know, I was looking at a website this morning, the 29 Rules for the Incorporated 501c3 Church, and it's a site on the internet, and you just kind of glance down these rules in order to maintain the tax-exempt status, the things that they must have. Like number eight, they must be neutral on political issues, you know. The number 12 opens its services to the public. Well, you know, I don't see no problem with the church opening its services to the public. So somebody might say, you know, that's fine. Number 13, not below it, is have their pastor answer to the IRS as the daily activities of the church. Number 14, let the IRS be private to all plans for transactions, including sources, donors, expenditures, and the cash is used in leadership. It would be likely suspect of money laundering. Those type of things are the things that just concern me about the 501c3. And did you ever come to the conclusion where you felt that they did, churches had to be a 501c3, or they did not have to be?
Well, Well, as far as I know, churches do not have to be a 501c3. Churches go that route because they believe it's an easy way to get limited liability and other particular protections they might have under the Internal Revenue Code and through the federal government's privilege program, I guess you could call it that. Certainly, churches have always been exempt from taxation, and even contributions, I understand, can be made to churches for those who file tax returns. Can therefore deduct them on their taxes. So I don't think there's any gain that way from incorporating a church under 501c3. As a matter of fact, it seems like the regulatory morass that one is thrust into, and things that you just read about, should at least give churches pause today. Why in the world are they going to do this to their church, where the door of regulation is open for all sorts of things, including now the current hate speech talk? So if government does, you're a 501c3 church and you start preaching against homosexuality, government decides that we need to be more sensitive to homosexuals, it's wrong to behave this way, then church is going to be called under the carpet and actually be subjected to the rules of the state, and this is certainly not acceptable. Churches should have nothing to do, therefore, because there's really no advantage with the 501c3. That's my conclusion. If they want to limit their liability, there are other ways to do it. One of which would be to use trust documents or other legal entities besides the 501c3 status.
Okay, good deal. Well, I was thinking again of that in conjunction with what you're talking about. You know, this morning with this this man you talked to last night and his stance, and you know, I would say that most people that take the divine right in the stance that you're talking about there would say there's no problem with it with the church being the 501c3, that they'd be going along with the quote status quo. I see very few churches that are not 501c3s in the country today.
Well, I think you're absolutely right, Joe, and I appreciate that comment. You're saying you don't actually hold to this view either, the divine right view that the American we shouldn't have been rebelling against the king and so forth. You would take a different position.
Yeah, I would lean more towards you. I would probably be kind of like in the middle between you and the divine right. I think that your book, Christian, and help me out, Dr. Coburn.
My latest book, Bible and Government: Public Policy from a Christian Perspective. Is that one?
Yes, I was pulling that out just yesterday, showing it to someone, and I had a couple of the inserts that you had given me, you know, a year ago, and we were talking about that. I see that the people that are out there. That say that you always have to go with what they say. I think that they're very limited thinkers.
Yes. Well, they really are, I think. This man last night certainly was not. He was quite a theologian, but he was struggling with the implications of his thesis and where what it really meant for the Christian worldview and for Christian life, because there's no easy answers after you go beyond the obvious of prohibiting gospel preaching and not bowing down to an idol or like Nebuchadnezzar had commanded and so forth. When you get down to the nitty-gritty, the tough issues, he's got to struggle a little bit. Well, anyway, we really appreciate the call this morning, Joe. We're coming up against a break, and we hope to hear back from you again soon, all right?
Good deal. I'll keep listening to you.
Thanks a lot, Joe. Bye-bye. And again, you're listening to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. We'll be right back.
Disinfecting the modern mainstream media, Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben.
We have the rights as individuals to give as much of our own money as we please to charity. But as members of Congress, we have no right so to appropriate a dollar of public money. Congressman Davy Crockett.
You're listening to the Tyranny Response Network. Go ahead, make your day.
The law of non-contradiction. The same thing cannot at the same time both belong and not belong to the same object and in the same respect. Aristotle.
This is Dr. John Coben. Visit policyofliberty.net, that's www.policyofliberty.net on the web, You'll find there books and articles written by Dr. John Coben, that's me, the Tyranny Response Unit, regarding things related to covenant marriage, allodial land titles, and free market economics. You'll also find there portraits of famous economists, including their biographical information and links to their famous works, as well as many, many quotations for liberty. Visit policyofliberty.net on the web today and find a wealth of information to help advancement of the truth.
If you have a question or comment for the show, please dial 864-201-6955. That's 864-201-6955, weekday mornings from 7:30 to 9. You may also email your questions and comments 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, to questions@policyofliberty.net. That's questions@policyofliberty.net.
Liberalism is not to be tossed lightly aside, but to be hurled with great force.
And we're doing that a bit this morning on Christian Worldview. Remember, this question 17 said, were the founding fathers, pastors, theologians, and church members in sin by becoming revolutionaries? We believe that they were not. I do, anyway. Some people would say that they were, and God just worked through their and blessed in spite of their sins. Remember, Proverbs 24:21 says, my son, fear the Lord and the king. Do not be associated with those given to change. That can either be taken as an absolute command out of Proverbs, which they usually are not, by the way, in the book of Proverbs. Do not become revolutionaries. Or it can say, look, be careful to fear God and the king. Emphasis on the king here. Don't associate with those who are going to cause you all sorts of grief. Be expedient in the way you act, and therefore you'll save your life. That's the idea. It's more of a terrestrial piece of wisdom. Two different ways you can look at the same passage. Were they just seeking redress at the American Revolution against the contractual charters they had with the king? It doesn't seem like it. It seems like they were in open rebellion and completely disobeying the edicts of Parliament and the king. And so I think they were considered by the king rebels. But were they in sin, or the people who fought against Lincoln against sin? I would say no. There are two different ways that you can handle the idea of authority when it comes to the civil government. One, besides the divine right view, which we've been talking about, one is the theonomic perspective, which is to say, as soon as a state becomes evil or antithetical to the ways of God, it becomes an illegitimate authority, and like a thief or a robber, must be opposed by Christians. Usually they would bring in a lower magistrate and attack the state, or supplant it, overthrow it, and therefore the American founders were right in what they did. At any time government goes beyond doing what God's Word says in the Old and New Testaments, there is a reason for rebellion against it and disobedience to the state. The other perspective, the liberty of conscience perspective, takes a completely different tack. This is my particular view, and that's the state is part and parcel of the kingdom of Satan. It's always under the decree of God, controlled and directed by the Lord in the same way that Satan himself is, but it's an institution that primarily afflicts nations, that produces satanic ramifications for any society, any culture, any nation, and that the state is indeed a wicked institution that brings chaos, murder, and so forth, mayhem, and history bears this out. Well, granted that that's the case, why in the world are we to submit to it? Well, the Apostle Paul and Peter basically tell us of the same pragmatic, or not pragmatic necessarily, but I guess that's the word I use in my book, but I mean by it expedient reasons. Look, you don't want to be in this world to fight against the state. You don't want to be here to bring hassle on your family. What we need to do is oppose the state, but only passively and rarely actively, when we have the force to do so. And other than that, it's just better to submit to it, pay their taxes, do whatever they require of you, so that you can get on with your main purpose in the world. That's another way you can look at the passages regarding the authority issues. That would make, therefore, all government rules of no moral implication whatsoever, except insofar as they exactly replicate what God has laid forth in His law, specifically laws that can be upheld in the New Testament, such as laws against murder, laws against stealing, laws against fraud, and so forth. Those things were in existence before the state came into being. All other legislation that the state comes up with is potentially can be potentially disobeyed at any Christian's call. If they don't think they're required to pay taxes, they shouldn't have to. If they can have a constitutional reason to not do so, fine. Everybody is left up to his own liberty of conscience to decide, but there isn't any one particular rule of the state that becomes the effective decree of God, as if the state were speaking as the oracle of God in any civilization. So you either have the view that virtually everything, the divine right, virtually everything is a decree of God by virtue of the fact that the state has said it, becomes, if something is illegal, it becomes sinful for the Christian, there's a moral implication. Or you take it and say anything that's not found, the government replicating exactly what's found in the Scripture in the Old and New Covenant is wrong, and you does not have to be obeyed the theonomic position. Or none of what the state says has any moral implications. In fact, unless, of course, it repeats the moral decrees of God from His Word, and especially the New Testament. Otherwise, the whole thing is can be disobeyed without any moral implications to the Christian per se. Now, there may be other moral implications for disobedience, such as being rebellious against the state policy, going to bring shame to Christ or to my family or to the church in some way, or not bring glory to God, not advance the gospel. Those would be other issues of sin that could occur on account of our actions we take toward government or towards opposing the civil government. So again, as we wrap this up, there are three different ways that Christians can look at this. I take the latter view. I don't think the state has been our friend. I think it's part and parcel of the kingdom of Satan. And anytime you want to take up a stand against the state, go for it. It's up to you and your liberty of conscience to do so. But remember, if you do so, don't do it with a rebellious heart, and certainly don't do it if it's going to bring less glory to God from your action or going to damage the church. Whimsically damage the church or your family. This is not the stewardship God has called you to in this world, not the role that He's called you to in this world. Well, that's a good way to wrap up the show for today. We'll be continuing this discussion because it comes up time and again here on Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben, and we look forward to more great deep talk helping you think better here on the Tyranny Response Network, and we look forward to seeing you again tomorrow morning.
You've been listening to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben on TRN. Join us again tomorrow morning right here at 97.7 FM on the Tyranny Response Network for Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben.
Hi, this is Dr. John Coben with Integrity Group. Let's consider Christian stewardship in terms of financial planning, saving, eliminating debt, lessening the burdens that can accompany a serious illness or accident. One of the most important reasons that we acquire life, disability, and long-term care insurance is because we want to love our neighbors as ourselves. After all, what kind of testimony do we give if we actually plan to rely on the charity of others? If we love others, especially our church and family members, we should do careful financial planning. Some Christians have 401k plans that need to be rolled over into a better investment alternative. Still others need to protect their wives and children by purchasing some inexpensive life or health insurance. At Integrity Group, we are dedicated to providing personalized service. As an independent financial planning firm with a wide range of products, we're here to help you become a better financial steward. Find out about our many services at 514 Pettigrew Street in downtown Greenville. Make an appointment with Integrity Group today at 864-244-6464. That's 864-244-6464.